Welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Oral History Project, where we are recording the oral histories of current and former DOC employees. I'm Communications Director Susan McNaughton. This oral history focuses on memories from the October 1989 riot at the State Correctional Institution at Camp Hill. Our guest today, September 4th, 2019, is Dave Varney. Thank you for joining us, Dave.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Before we begin, Dave, could you provide us with a brief overview of your DOC career?
Sure. I began with the DOC in 1984 as an assistant counsel, I continued to work for the DOC under the Office of General Counsel until retiring in January of 2013. In 1989, there were, I believe, four of us in the Office of Chief Counsel. The Chief Counsel was Ted Otto. There was myself and Fred Smith and Dave Horowitz.
Right, and now there's a lot more.
Oh, yeah. A lot more.
It's crazy. Okay, so let's talk about the Camp Hill riot. And it started mid-afternoon, Wednesday, October 25th, 1989. Tell us where you were and what you remember.
Okay. I was in the office that day, and I was in my office, which was on the third floor, kind of just around the corner from the press office. And I got a call from Steve Miller, who was a good friend of mine. He was down in Human Resources on the second floor. And he said, "You got to look out the back of the building. There's something going on in the yard." And I don't recall if I went down to Steve's office. I think I did initially. And a lot of inmates milling about. And this probably was shortly after it started, because it was right around 3 o'clock or shortly thereafter. And I think we were just all mesmerized watching it kind of develop and explode. What I remember most about that night, and I was there until, 11 or so that night when the situation had gotten under control, I think I watched most of it from the third floor back in the commissioner's complex with Dave Gearhart, Frank Gillis, and Bob Bittner.
Okay.
And they were back in the back corner, and their windows faced right onto the yard where it was mostly taking place. Mm-hmm. What I remember from that day, as I was telling you, Sue, before we started recording, I kind of have snippets of memory, kind of like photographs in my head, or short videos. I remember the worst part of it was, and this was still, I think, in the afternoon. I mean, it hadn't gotten to evening or dark yet. We knew there was hostages, so you could see it. And in one case in particular, they paraded one to the middle of the yard. He was blindfolded. I think his uniform shirt was off, if I remember right. And they had him on his knees, and they were, I don't remember what, I think it was one inmate in particular that kind of was there with the officer. But clearly they were threatening him, facing central office, so they knew we were all watching it. And that was hard to watch, really hard to watch. And I think at that point, we knew there were hostages, we knew people's lives were in danger. And, it was bad. I remember at some point, that's that first day of the riot, seeing that they had a vehicle or two. It must be pictures after the fact, but because I don't think we could see this from central office, but where they got a vehicle and tried to ram the fence, the rear fence.
Right.
Towards the Capital City Mall.
Tell me what the atmosphere was like in the office with those other individuals, and that room that you were in, the office that you were in, was really right next to where the commissioner and the deputy commissioner were. Like, what was the atmosphere? Yeah. Was there a lot of running around, screaming? What?
Well, it wasn't screaming. It wasn't panic or anything. I think we were in shock. I'll be honest, this is true for me of all 3 days, called in the second day of the ride and everything. It kind of felt helpless. You know, it's like, what can we do? There's nothing we can do but sit here and watch. I mean, at that point, it was just corrections personnel, state police, and of course, came in force, other police, you know, first responders. You know, it was like they had to take control of the institution, and there was nothing we could do. I don't remember having any contact with the commissioner that day. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no... Here's a snippet I remember that I think's a little unusual. Ted was not there, the chief counsel. Okay. I don't know if you've spoken to Ted yet.
No.
He was out in the western part of the state. I don't remember if it was on personal, you know, vacation time or a business, you know, something with work. But I don't even think he was there for the second. I don't think he got there until Friday.
Okay.
So I was in touch with him, I believe, and told him what was going on. And that was it. I might have spoken to Roz Robinson, who was the deputy general counsel, who was the DOC liaison with the general counsel's office.
Okay.
But if I did, it was brief, and I'm sure she got her information from higher up. But at that time, the OGC didn't have nearly the close connection with the department offices that they do now, that they have in the last 20 years.
Okay.
So there was no real role I was playing or our office was playing in all this. So I felt more like we were bystanders. You know, the atmosphere was kind of disbelief, anxiety, because people were clearly in danger. There were hostages and kind of helpless bystanders, kind of what it felt like.
Right. So essentially everything, every project that you had been working on up to that point just kind of came to a screeching halt.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me how that night ended, and then the next day you just came to work?
Yeah. Yep. So the night ended, I think, once all the inmates were put back in the housing units. I don't think we knew at the time what kind of danger that posed, but and I only know after the fact. I'm not sure I would have known, or the three of us, four of us watching would have known, but that there, I guess there was an agreement reached with the superintendent to talk to them the next day. So it seemed like it was all calm. There was plenty of police there. So I left about 11:30 that night, came back to work the next morning. I don't think anything was normal. I don't specifically remember what I did that day, but everything, you know, that the institution was partially torn up, and there was no business as usual at that point.
And then you left at your regular, pretty much your regular quitting time, and then what happened?
I did. And what I remember that evening, Thursday evening, was I was volunteering on a helpline.
Oh.
And a friend of mine called, who was watching TV, and started talking about the riots and watching it on TV. I said, well, you know, that was yesterday, right? He wasn't from the Harrisburg area. And he said, no, it's happening right now. I couldn't believe it, so I hung up and called. I don't remember who I called. I don't know if I called into the office to see if somebody would answer, or who I called, but I got a hold of somebody, and they said they wanted everybody in, everybody from central office in. So I drove from there. That was on the East Shore. And I drove over, and it was dark. Of course, it was October. And from the end of Lisburn Road, I came from the eastern end of Lisburn Road, you could already see flames, police sirens everywhere. I think I was stopped I don't remember where. It might have been the end of Lisburn, or might have been down by the prison, but stopped by a state policeman. I told him who I was, that I had been called in. They let me go in. I parked, went upstairs, and that was even more shocking that night.
How so?
multiple buildings were on fire. Clearly, the inmates were in more control than they had been the riot the previous day. So it seemed like, wow, all hell's breaking loose at this point. I remember one snippet in my head is, I remember at some point with the buildings on fire, the cell blocks in particular, I'm talking about right behind Central Office, I remember seeing people running across the roof, and it was inmates. And it's like, wow.
That was very eerie. I remember seeing that too.
Do you remember that? Yeah.
Because it's dark. They were like silhouetted against the flames.
Yes.
And so
yes,
you weren't really sure who you were seeing.
Yeah, it was very, very odd. Again, it was kind of a feeling of helplessness. I mean, it was just hoping they could get things under control, could save people's lives. And that night, we stayed all night. Mm-hmm. I mean, that went on through the night. I remember a helicopter coming, I believe, or an ambulance, because a staff member either had been brought out or had, if I remember right, inmates brought this staff member out who was severely injured.
Yes, somebody else mentioned
in front. Yeah, in front of, if you're looking out of the back of Central Office, it was the first block to the right. It was in that yard, in that grassy area between that block and the fence. Mm-hmm. They brought that. We kind of thought he might be dead, to be honest. I kind of remember thinking that. I don't know if we realized at some point that he wasn't, but it was really horrible to watch. But they brought that inmate out, and then he was taken away.
And who took him away, do you remember?
I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if it was an ambulance, or I don't think a helicopter could land there.
Was there like a special rescue team that went and got him, or...?
Maybe. Uh-huh. Maybe a corrections team, because I'm not sure an ambulance would have gone there at that point. Maybe a team rescued him and took him over to an area where they had control. I remember the ninjas.
Tell me about the
point
ninjas.
Later in the night. And that was in the same area. I remember seeing them. Maybe they were there for that rescue. But they were dressed in all black, and clearly it was law enforcement, and I'd never seen anything like that before. But where I remember seeing them was that same area I just described, where the staff member had been brought out, who had been injured and you know, rescued and taken away. And the flames just burned and burned and burned. And then the other thing I remember in particular, of course, was kind of very early the next morning, the assembling of, you know, the state police, hundreds of them, armed. Again, that was right behind Central Office.
Facing us.
And, pardon me?
They were facing us.
Yeah. Yep. It was amazing to watch. It was just incredible. This was all happening right in front of us. And just... what seemed like fairly quickly, once they assembled all that show of force, and I know after the fact that shots had been fired and said there were some injuries. I'm not sure if I remember, if, you know, knowing that at the time, but it seemed like in fairly short order, like within an hour or so of that happening, that they quelled the riots, and the inmates had given up, and they, I remember them crawling on their bellies, coming out. I don't know if it was in small numbers or one by one, but they had a system for getting them in control and cuffed and controlling the institution. And then, honestly, nothing was ever the same again. Mm. You know, I think it changed the system, it changed our office.
So tell me how it changed the chief counsel's office.
Well, we had traditionally been, after chief counsel's office was created back in the early 80s, for each agency, we traditionally did advisory work to department administrators, one large class action, I think it was called Arbogast, that was brought immediately after the riot about the conditions the inmates were being held in. Mm. Out in the yard, they were still cuffed. I mean, it happened immediately. And that went, well, it was ongoing for quite a while over the various conditions they were being held in. And then dozens and dozens of lawsuits were filed by the inmates, believe it or not, post-riot about the conditions at Camp Hill. What was happening, claims of retaliatory use of force, all kinds of, you know, punishment outside of policy, et cetera, et cetera. So the Attorney General's office who handled that was overwhelmed with it. And then there were discussions, and I don't remember how long after the riot, I would say within a year, I would say, of our office starting to handle some of the other litigation, inmate litigation that they traditionally handled, you know, from other prisons, straightforward litigation. And we did that. And initially it was just for the Middle District of Pennsylvania, and it was just certain kinds of cases that they thought we could, you know, handle in relatively short order. And then it just kept expanding, because the inmate population kept expanding. Mm-hmm. for a while there. And so eventually, and we were severely understaffed for that undertaking for many years. And that only begun to be addressed when Governor Ridge came in and Sarah Vandenbrack was appointed chief counsel, and she became aware of how understaffed we are. And she kind of did a long fight and fairly successful one we got a lot more staff in that period of time.
So you're talking about Ridge came
down the road.
95. Oh, so,
yeah. I mean, it just was a kind of a snowball effect, really, that that lasted for years and years. You know, I would say it was a good late 90s until we were kind of up and running with enough staff to handle all that and our traditional obligations, you know, as the chief counsel's office. So from that end, you know, the riots just had an impact all across the department, and things were different after that. I mean, we had the new commissioners after that. They all, I think, brought a more expertise approach. That's the right word. But experts were brought in, and then, you know, with every commissioner after that. I'm not criticizing Commissioner Owens. It just seemed like the approach to corrections had to change. You know, Commissioner Lehman and Marty Horn and Jeff Beard and you know, Secretary Wetzel, I didn't really work that long under, but it just changed everything.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to go back to those few days after the riot. I remember it was kind of like, I'm here as I'm a lawyer, but you know, we weren't serving a legal function in those days. It was really no legal question to be answered. It was a matter of the administrators and state police and our people at Camp Hill and other institutions, you know, getting control of the situation. So, you know, we weren't really playing roles as lawyers, but it was an all hands on deck approach. You know, we were there all night Thursday night, I think all day Friday. Mm-hmm. Until Friday evening. So most of us hadn't slept for 36 hours. And then Saturday morning, I remember coming in, I think all weekend. And I don't remember the order, but I know a whole bunch of us from central office were making bologna sandwiches in the cafeteria. You probably remember that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if that was for inmates, probably for both inmates and staff. I remember also working over across the road from, like, the Camp Hill administrative building. Mm-hmm. There's some outbuildings. There were National Guard field ovens set up, and we were cooking MREs, meals ready to eat. Again, I think those were for first responders, but, I mean, everything was so turned upside down. I mean, you had, I think, hundreds and hundreds of inmates out in the field shackled for days, I think.
Right.
And they had to be fed, and all these additional, you know, state personnel, state police, they had to be fed. I mean, it was just an incredible undertaking.
Tell me what it looked like as you were walking from the central office building over to those outbuildings. Like, what did you see parked along the roadways and what kind of activities?
Police. Yeah, I think that whole field across from central office was all parked with cars. Mm. I think I parked there the night of the riot, the second night. And yeah, state police everywhere, fire trucks, ambulances.
And the news media kind of mixed in among it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Very crazy time.
Yeah.
In knowing I was going to be talking to you, I was hoping I could remember like specific conversations and stuff, and I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember what it felt like when we were all watching it, both that first night, the first day, and then the second night and then the next morning. But
we all just kind of chipped in and did whatever needed to be done.
We did. Yeah, we did. It was just be there in case you were needed for whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then after the fact, we were needed for stuff like making sandwiches and cooking MREs.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of crazy, but it had to be done.
Yeah, it did. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about that you maybe forgot to mention?
Well, I remember, this might, if you've talked to Linda Morrison Sullivan, she probably confirmed this. I think in the immediate days afterwards, I think she had to go buy locks.
Yes.
Because she was in purchasing. I think
right.
Joe Miller was with her, right? So I remember that specific thing.
She had talked to about how she went inside with Dave Garlinger after the first day.
Wow.
I didn't know that. Yeah, to look at equipment
wow.
that the kitchen needed. And,
uh-huh.
Yeah, so she's surprised when, you know, that night she found out it was starting again. But
yeah.
I actually have Joe Miller set up for an interview, so I'll be talking to him.
Wow.
But, and several other people.
Now, was Joe in security in Central, or was he?
No,
in
he
Camp
was
Hill
a lieutenant at Camp Hill at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I have a lot of different names keep popping up with the different people that I talk to. So
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I've seen it on the Facebook page. It's been fascinating to see all these names from the past.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right.
Who was in the press office, Sue?
What's that?
You and Ken, right? Was
well,
it just you and Ken in the press office?
I was the clerk steno. Ken was the press secretary, and he had a brand new deputy press secretary, Sherry Cadeau. And she actually had been down at the training academy on Otley Drive when the riot started and left her ID in her desk drawer and couldn't get through the roadblock. So we had to send our messenger to verify who she was to get her through the roadblock. And then our former deputy press secretary was Iris Crumbly, and she was actually at the time serving as assistant to the commissioner, but she helped out with the media calls as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blast from the past.
I'm telling you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to just give whatever recollection I had.
Well, thank you, because you did, you know, like I said, everybody's story is important, no matter what role they played in you know, in the event. And they all weave together the stories.
They do. They do. I think it's a great project. It's a story that needs to be told. So my hat's off to you.
Well, thank you.
For sure.